You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405, and we want to welcome Greg Wall, the founder and chief strategist for Anton and Chia. So, welcome. Thanks for joining us, Greg. Tell us a little bit about what you have done to get this wonderful, this large, expanding firm of CPAs to grow.
Well, I think one of the things we came up with a business plan a number of years ago that we believed that there was opportunities in the small middle market to have an international boutique small firm, you know, integrated with Canadian operation, Asia, Europe, and South America. And we just kind of felt like the small middle market was underserved. And we started the firm in late 2009 and kind of began executing on that business plan.
So tell us a little bit about your history, because you have a fascinating history starting off in Canada, in British Columbia, huh?
Yeah, you know, British Columbia is my home province, and I grew up there and kind of lived the Canadian dream, you know, playing minor pro hockey and junior hockey, and went back to school and was one of those guys that knew he was going to do something in business, but just, you know, kind of fell into marketing and accounting and finance. I was hired by KPMG when I was 25 years old, which was halfway through my degree, and went and got my CA equivalent or CPA equivalent in Canada. I left Canada when I was 30 for Atlanta, Georgia, KPMG, and got to work on some large clients down there, very nice household names like Philips and Panasonic, and it was a great experience. But, you know, growing up and coming down to California as a kid with my parents, I was drawn to the West Coast, and I joined a firm by the name of Kropstein Horwath in early 2005 up in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, and joined them. I was about 6-7 years in my career, and I made partner at a young age. And they shipped me down here to Orange County to open their Orange County office for them at that time. They're eventually bought out by Crowe Horwath, and Crowe still has their Orange County office in the same offices that, you know, we started there. So that's pretty cool. Kind of built that thing up there, you know, gave me some good experience, you know, managing people, hiring, and going out and doing a lot of business development. And I left there and went to another firm and did very well on the business development side. And just kind of felt like, hey, it's time to go start the idea that I put together in, you know, late 2009. We put together Anton in about 6.5 years. We're about 75 employees, 8 offices, 4 up in the Vancouver area, 3 here in California in Westlake Village, Newport Beach, San Diego, and we just recently opened Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's very impressive, very impressive. All in 6 years. Now, question for you is, you had a interesting experience as a hockey player. Is starting this firm anything like starting your own hockey team?
Well, I think it is in many respects. If you're the GM of an organization, you have to look at, you know, your assets, which are your people. What type of assets do you have? You have to, you know, put a product on the ice or you know, out there that, you know, people are going to want to buy. Mm-hmm. And that's your, you know, your end customer, and you got to look at, hey, do I have the financial capital, and, you know, what's my average total cost, and what's my budget, and, you know, where do I think we're going to grow, and, you know, obviously you have to create new products too to, you know, to keep you know, growing the business. So
good. Well, tell me a little bit about what there's lots of CPA firms.
Yep.
So what's unique about Anton and Chia?
Well, I think what makes us unique is market positioning wise. We're truly an international firm. We have a joint venture with the 14th largest firm in mainland China named Zhongwei. They have about 4,000 employees, 18 offices in the mainland, and an office in Hong Kong, which allows us to go and do projects up in Asia and Hong Kong without, you know, having to go to a third-party CPA firm. And we got their bench strength. We had 31 Chinese delegates in our office 2 weeks ago. We did a presentation for. So that's pretty exciting for us. We just got that closed in last September. We have an affiliate office in Mexico City. So, you know, if we have clients that have subsidiaries or set up offices in Mexico, we have a firm that can actually go properly do due diligence there. An example is one of our clients was owed about $250,000 of VAT tax from the Mexican government. They hired our firm in Mexico City, and they were able to get that money back from the Mexican government, at least 75% of it, which my understanding is pretty unheard of. And with also with our investment into Canada, we were obviously doing a lot of work up there with my licensing. We bought into a couple firms up there now and have four offices in the Vancouver area. And we're seeing tremendous opportunities in being able to serve the Canadian snowbirds that are down here. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of Americans that have bought into, you know, Canadian assets and real estate and residential properties. So we've seen, you know, a tremendous upside in the structure we've built and being full service in Canada and full service in the United States. And I think we're one of the few firms in the world probably that can IPO a firm here in the United States, IPO a firm in Canada, and then do IPOs in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Shenzhen, all under the same platform.
Really? Well, yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that, the same platform.
What I mean by the same platform is that I own the firm 100% mm-hmm. here in the U.S., and then I'm the majority partner up in Vancouver, Canada. We bought the firm from a friend of ours who... He was my first audit partner at KPMG, and he's still actively involved in the business, George Marine. And we have two other partners there that are equity with me who helped me run the business up there, and Kevin Schindler, who's a longtime friend from KPMG as well, and our audit partner, Travis Bryson.
And now, and also you can do that in Hong Kong?
Yeah, that's through the Zhongwei platform that we've affiliated with. And so, you know, what was interesting to me was when I wrote out the kind of the business plan and we went through the crisis there in, you know, 07, 08, 09, I had investment banking friends shifting their clients into the TSX. You saw people moving their IPOs and fundraisers, capital raises from the U.S. markets into Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was like, you know, we kind of have to really diversify to really, you know, to kind of be in that market full time. We have to look at how are we going to optimize our resources and ensure we don't lose clients to the bigger firms, you know, when they say we're going to go to Hong Kong. Because when you think about those kind of markets, you kind of think of the top five, top six firms, right? You don't think of a firm our size who's only 75 employees.
Well, now, do you think that we've gotten beyond the kind of quiet, behind-the-scenes tax that high-frequency traders had been exhorting from people who were selling their stocks?
I don't... You know, it's the markets have changed so much, mm-hmm. and especially with you know, computer platforms and whatnot. You know, if there's, you know, you have to look at the VIX every day and, you know, where the volatility is, and obviously, you know, they're looking at it pretty intensely too, and that's where the trading opportunities are.
Right.
So I think, you know, the markets, you know, unfortunately, the way the government's gone with, you know, regulating everybody in FINRA, a lot of small guys have moved out of the marketplace, and it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, in the United States you're supposed to be, you know, considered a laissez-faire competitive market, and what you've done is basically forced all the small guys out of the marketplace, and it's into these large institutions that can spend the money on market making. And, you know, is it really fair to the little guy anymore? Mm-hmm. And I just don't see it being mm-hmm. that way because, you know, look at Goldman Sachs. I mean, they're the largest market maker in probably the world, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And they make the most money. Well, gee, you know, do they have how many cases have you seen where there's a conflict of interest?
Right.
With Goldman Sachs, nothing against Goldman Sachs, obviously.
Right.
But, I mean, that's just a fact, right? So what have we done? We've basically forced the little guy out and made it for the big guys, and we've created less competition.
Well, do you see that happening in California in terms of businesses here?
What I've seen is you've seen an exodus of firms to, you know, Texas and Arizona and Nevada, and just because of the corporate tax rates and the reduced litigation. And but what you've seen is a lot of the bigger firms have kind of stuck it out here.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that have stuck it out here, I think, have done well. You know, we have one client that does retail and financing. And, I mean, they were about $300 million in 2009. They're well over $1.5 billion now.
Hmm.
So they've had a great growth story. They've stuck it out. They've actually expanded into Nevada, so and Arizona, but they've kept their core business here in California. So I think, you know, there's definitely opportunities here in California. It's just you got to have the right cost structure and the right team in place to really manage it.
So we were talking before we started the show about how sometimes people believe that doing business in California is difficult because of, you know, regulatory and fiscal constraints.
Right.
And now, tell us a little bit about what you see coming in the next 5 years that, you know, in California that businesses should prepare for.
Well, I mean, I was looking through the government websites, and, you know, I'm not really a details guy from that standpoint, but you're going to have more regulation on, with regards to employee salary, you know, overtime rates. You know, you have a lot of regulation on the employee side, as, you know, California is a very protectionist state towards employees, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You just got to have the right HR people in place. You know, obviously take advantage of those third party, the ADPs of the world to manage your compliance for you. You're going to see more to do with credit card fraud, you know, putting in, you know, technology to, you know, and prevent that. You know, the onus is starting to be shifted to the company itself and not necessarily the consumer. So, you know, companies need to be aware of that. So there's just, you know, there's a lot of regulation around, you know, interstate commerce. You know, that's another area that, you know, companies in California that when they start shifting into Nevada or, you know, Arizona, they start, you know, incurring penalties and fees on, you know, in other states, and sometimes they don't realize they got to pay tax there. So it's always good to hire the right advisors, you know, getting good people in that, you know, have handled these types of situations before within the organization so that you can manage that process for the future.
So what I'm hearing from you is that it is possible to thrive doing business in California.
I think so. I think it's, you know, when you really look at California holistically, I mean, it's always ranked in the top 10, you know, in terms of economies in the world. You know, there's a lot of business here. You have, you know, great gateway from Asia. You can't beat the weather here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get a lot of people staying here just because of the weather. And I think people really kind of get that, you know, if your household income isn't, you know, a certain number, you know, it's a very challenging to live here in California. So, you know, for Irvine, you know, that's where I live, you always have a lot of professionals that live in Irvine that are doctors, dentists, and whatnot. And, you know, they all tend to make a higher level of income than the average. So I just think just because of the demographics here in California and within the various cities, I mean, it's a great opportunity here to be here and to build a business. I think the challenge is getting your business from that, you know, whatever your cost structure is within your business and, you know, getting it to that certain level where you have economies of scale. I think that's really the challenge. It's really the startup years. If you can kind of survive those and get to a certain size, I think it's a great place to be to build a platform.
Well, what is it that companies need to be thinking about or leaders need to be thinking about to thrive in California, given the constraints that are there? I mean, it seems to me, I've often heard people say, you know, you have to be two or three times as effective and efficient in running your business to get the same results as somebody in Omaha. So what is it that businesses need to be doing here to thrive?
Well, I think it's like any business. You have to look at it holistically and then look at your margins, look at your average total cost, right? And then look at the team of people that you have. Do you have the right team of people to run that organization at that level? You know, as you know, as the organization grows, you got to have the vision for the type of people that you need in that organization at certain stages. So I think people that run their business and really take a look at it and say, okay, if I got to be three times more efficient, I have to probably be, you know, growing at a certain rate, right? So I have to have that growth factor. You know, I would argue if you're not growing at 10 to 20% a year, you're not going to get the economies of scale that you want here in California. So there's the growth and marketing side. So there's that piece. Then you got the internal compliance, okay? If you can't afford the right people in-house, you got to be able to source that out-house, which actually there's a lot of cost-effective structures,
mm-hmm.
Opportunities with consultants, whatnot, that you can do from an HR standpoint. And I think the key is being creative. You know, you have to be creative in ways to go after different pieces of the marketplace. I'll give you an example. You know, in our in our business, everybody comes to me, well, who's your favorite client? I'm like, well, what product am I selling?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So because we've developed a lot of different products. You know, one we just created was for targeting startup companies, right? We see an opportunity with startup companies in the sense there's a lot of them here in California, especially up in the Bay Area, in Santa Monica, Silicon Beach, if you want to call it now,
mm-hmm.
San Diego, and Orange County, of course. But, you know, we said, okay, let's price out, you know, monthly bookkeeping and advisory and filing our tax returns. And we came up with a product with about $68,000 a year.
Mm.
First up, come to the going, this is what's going to cost you to get everything done
what?
That you need to get done and get you some advisory if you need help on, you know, investor presentations and that kind of stuff. So that's one product that we created because we see an opportunity in the marketplace. And that's what business owners have to do. And if they can't get it cheaper than, obviously, their competitors and can't be more efficient than their competitors, they got to consider, you know, something else.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever that someone else it might be, I don't know, it could be moving to Texas, could be, you know, selling, could be, you know, going BK, I don't know what that is. But the point is, you have to be constantly looking at your business and saying, how can I optimize it? How can I make it better? How can I make it more fun for the employees? Because they're your biggest asset.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not doing that, I think you're going to have really significant challenges.
Well, it sounds to me like part of the issue is while people might want to blame regulation, Sacramento, tax structures, things like that, the real issue is if that's the lay of the land, if that's really the opposing hockey team,
right.
We can complain all we want about the opposing hockey team and how good they are, how bad they are, what kind of strategy they're using. But if we're going to win, we got to be creative and overcome the obstacles, right?
Absolutely. I think it, you know, when, you know, people ask me all the time, obviously I'm not a U.S. citizen, so I can't vote. So everybody asks me, oh, you know, who are you going to vote for? And, you know, I listen to what's going on in the marketplace. We see what's going on with the regulators. And I think, like you said, you have to be able to adapt to the challenges, and one of it's the political challenges and regulatory challenges. You got to, you know, look at that and be able to adapt your organizations. You know, our QC partner, you know, said that, you know, it's interesting what we've done because we're one of the few firms that have taken the small IPO product and now expanded into all these other products and other locations. And so that's been our kind of our goal. And the reason why we're doing that is there is a lot of regulatory compliance when you do small IPOs,
mm-hmm.
right? So you have to have the product structures, the other revenues to offset that you know that cost structure and decrease that average margin per product per client. And so if you're not looking at that and growing your business and becoming full service, especially in our business, you mean I think you're really, A, you're missing out on opportunities to service the client, and then, B, you're not truly optimizing your organization.
Well, it seems to me that one of the first commitments that a company needs to make is where we're going to be.
Right.
Are we going to stay in California?
Right.
People can leave, right?
Right.
I mean, we could give them the telephone number for the governor of Texas, and I'm sure he would take their call, right?
Absolutely.
And so once a company says, like many of my clients, we want to stay in California, whatever they're doing, we're going to stay here.
Right.
And then it becomes, then what are we going to do to thrive?
Right.
How do you help companies who have decided to stay in California, how do you help them thrive?
Well, one of the things we do is we will help them do a strategic analysis with them. You know, we have a corporate advisory group. We'll sit there and look at, you know, their products, their markets. And it's interesting, one of our clients is a decent-sized studio, and we talked to them about moving into Vancouver because
mm-hmm.
They got a lot of tax credits. And if you look at their revenue mix now, it's basically 50% in Canada, 50% here still in California. And we've helped them with transfer pricing and, you know, all the you know, nitty-gritty stuff on the mm-hmm. tax side, too, to make sure that, you know, they're not getting caught up with the regulators on the tax side. And
mm-hmm.
we're optimizing their, I can't say minimizing tax, but optimizing their tax structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of one of the ways we can help out. We've been involved with, you know, on the strategy side, looking at various different states, working with investment banks and analyzing, you know, where are their customers,
mm-hmm.
right? Where does it make sense to be? You know, where does it make sense to be, right? Does it make sense to still be here in California? Should you have your head office here, or where are you getting your capital inflows? And we've kind of done those analysis for clients. And, you know, we've moved them to Michigan or, you know, set up branch offices in Michigan or Texas or someone in Florida as well. So, you know, that's kind of some of the things that we can do as a CPA firm. We obviously have all the other nuts and bolts that a full-service CPA firm would do. Which, you know, would be your quality of earnings and due diligence, your buy-side, sell-side representation, audits, reviews, compilations for both public and private clients, and then corporate and personal tax. So,
good. Well, so business advisory services, would you say that what kind of business advisory services do you provide?
Very interesting to ask. I mean, one of our new platforms is in the consulting advisory space. You know, our advisory has been on, like I said, buy side and sell side, M&A, and doing quality of earnings for the buy side. You know, looking at, you know, corporate capital structures, looking at optimization of that capital structure, working on deleveraging, you know, the balance sheet. Some clients have too much debt, as you know, and they, you know, they're like, oh, how do I get out of this without going through the BK process, right? So we've looked at that and helped them through those struggles. You know, the big thing on the corporate advisory side is also, you know, doing like executive level type reports. There are people out there that, you know, run large organizations and things are going great and they're growing, and they're like, do I really have a handle, a pulse on my organization?
Oh, really?
So we'll go in and do, you know, some due diligence and do some, you know, bunch of site visits and go and check things out and do a report for the CEO that's and the board of directors or the audit committee, and kind of, you know, from an operation standpoint, you know, show them, like, hey, they're doing well or they're not doing well. And so that's something that's been really, you know, unique from our standpoint. We haven't done that much before. But, you know, it's very valuable for those executives to get that third-party advice. We're not their auditor. We're not their tax guy, right? We're totally independent business people coming in and taking a look at their business and saying, hey, this is what we see. You know, you might want to further investigate this, or if you want us to further investigate it, we can go and do that. One of the other interesting things that we've done is on the transfer pricing side is kind of look at, okay, well, where is it best to move taxes to? Can, you know, can you get that in, you know, integration? Can you, you know, can, is there an opportunity there? So we've done that in a number of cases and, you know, help clients through that. You know, sometimes it's simple as even, you know, clients have asked, like, I don't know what my business is worth, you know, and not necessarily doing a, you know, evaluation through, you know, where it's an accredited advisor, but coming as with finance backgrounds and CPAs, doing forecasts, doing modeling, and, you know, we've done a handful of those, and the investment banks have taken our data and redone them, and they're within 2-3% of their math. So, you know, we have a good understanding of what, you know, company valuation should be.
Well, it seems to me that one of the things that companies need to be really clear about is where they want to go.
Right.
What they want to become. What's their vision?
Right.
Right? What? And a lot of that's got to do with what their why is.
Right.
And it's got to be more than money.
Yeah. You got to think about, you know, leaving a legacy or, you know, how you're positioning your organization. Because there's a lot of things you have to look at that. You know, when I started, you know, I was in my garage, right? I was just me by myself, you know, slaving away. And now, you know, I have to look at, you know, the millennials, right? Looking at, you know, what they want in an organization, you know, training, you know, all these really soft things, like, you know, what kind of brand do you want to have? Not just from what people see out in the advertisements and, you know, seeing the tax returns or the audit opinions. You know, what's the brand, the internal brand? So you always have to look at those sorts of things, and what is it you want the organization to be?
Right. Good. Well, we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to come back, and I want to hear a little bit more about that distance between where people want to be with their business and where they actually are right now, and what they can do to effectively and efficiently close that gap between where they want to be and where they are. So, let's hear a little bit from our sponsors.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Does your company need more than basic financial transactions? Are you holding your business back with your entry-level accounting software? When your business starts to grow, and it will, you'll need more security, features, and functionality. Well, let me introduce you to Gravity Software. Gravity Software's online accounting solution is written on the Microsoft CRM platform. No more islands of information. Financials and CRM are fully integrated and in the cloud. Gravity's goal is to fill the gap between entry-level accounting software like QuickBooks and complex and expensive enterprise applications. Gravity Software, simply innovative business management. Learn more at go-gravity.com.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been having a great conversation with Greg Wall of Anton & Chia. And when we finished, we were just beginning to talk about that distance between where companies want to be, their vision, and where they are right now. So tell us a little bit, Greg, about what you can help companies do to get clear about their vision, and then I would assume that you're very good at helping them to get very clear about where they are right now.
Absolutely. You know, I think in every business, there's two things that you have to analyze pretty much every day, and is your human capital and the access to capital. So if you have a vision to go from, let's say, $5 million in revenue to $50 million in revenue, you have to look at the industry in the sense that, okay, where are you positioned in that industry, number one? And what are you doing within the industry? And what are the opportunities within that industry, right? And what the changes of technology and, you know, what's going on in the labor markets. And you have to take a look at it and say, okay, I'm here at $5 million, okay? I want to be there at 50. How am I going to get there? And you have to really take a, tough gut check to see if that makes sense. At the end of the day, it's really about the people starting the business, right? They're going to be the people that drive that business. And you got to be able to look at that person and say, okay, what's their track record, right? What have they done before? Are people going to get behind you, to do this? And that's critical because, I've been through it personally. And, when you're at $2 million and you can't get bank financing, and you're financing everything through your margin account on your stock portfolio.
Right, right.
I mean, those are just ways that you can get around, funding your business. So you have to really look at that, and then you have to realize at some point, especially with us. I mean, before the first 4 or 5 years, nobody wanted to join our firm. They didn't know who the heck we were. But, in the last couple of years, it's been, we put out a job posting, we get 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your access to the human capital you need to go and grow that business? Do you have that? Do people want to work for you? Who mm-hmm. knows, right? Is it a sexy industry? Maybe it's not. So I think you got to look at all these factors. And, obviously, people that have done it before are smart people. And but if you look at the failure rate of businesses, I mean, the number's obscene, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's three to four to five businesses fail,
mm-hmm.
right? And, most of them don't make it past the first 3 years. So it's something that you just have to look at your day-to-day numbers. You look at your growth opportunities, diversification into different products, into different markets, and then can you get the people to go and execute that plan for you?
Well, now, it seems to me that as businesses grow, that they tend to start off with 1, 2, 3, 4 people who are very good at doing things in the industry. Maybe the founders come up with a new invention or a new process, but nevertheless, they know about the industry. And there's a point at which they begin to hit the ceiling because it's going to take more than just them. And we've moved from being focused on what we produce to now we need to focus on running a business.
Right.
And that's a significant challenge, significant change
right.
for a company.
No, I agree. I mean, even from my own experience, you know, I was considered a great sales guy and, you know, a very creative accountant, which I still am. But, you know, now my job is more about running the day-to-day, you know, looking at the training programs, looking at, you know, our HR talent, looking at, you know, the people that we put in position to run the audit group, run the tax group, run the consulting group, you know, hiring a CFO. And so, you know, you have to be able to adapt. You know, if you can't get out of that box of, you know, running or, like you said, you know, developing that product, and you can't, you know, move the organization along further, you're going to have to find someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough for people, right? That means if you're the product genius and you're creating all the products and you're the, that's great. I mean, you need new products and inventions. But if you got to go hire a CEO and you're now not the guy anymore, I mean, that's a tough thing
yeah.
for someone to
yeah.
do, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've observed in coaching people with the entrepreneurial operating system is that there's a difference between the visionary and what we call the integrator.
Correct.
The one who helps all those division chiefs or VPs work together harmoniously
right.
to get laser focused on what the vision is.
Right.
And that's a major shift because now we've begun to involve the senior management in all the decision making. And it's not just that visionary who put together the company who has lots of ideas
right.
but is not focusing on letting the people who are competent, capable, want to do it to do that. That's a major shift.
It's a major shift, and then I believe, like, if you're the visionary, right, you have to check back, be able to check back into the company and have the controls to make sure that that management team is doing what you want done,
mm-hmm.
right? And that creates a lot of turmoil internally. And you have to be able to manage that turmoil, getting people on the same page. And sometimes the things that you implement don't work. So you got to look at, okay, well, why didn't it work, right? And you have to figure out what's going to work and why it's going to work. So it becomes, you know, I always joke, you know, anyone can kind of build their company to, you know, 6, 7, 8 million by themselves, mm-hmm. right? You know, one guy can do that. But it really takes a team to go from that 6, 7, 8 million to 20, 25 million.
Right.
And then we talked about it before we go on here. You know, if you get to that 25, 35 million range and you want to go to 100 million, well, that could take a totally different set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to realize that where you are in the business life cycle. And you got to be honest about it. And, you know, I think the great thing that we've had is, you know, I've been lucky enough to fire myself from a lot of different duties.
Right.
And, you know, being put in the position where doing the things that I like to do and what I'm good at.
Well, and that to me is one of the really key elements that I work with the entrepreneurial operating system is helping people to take a really good look at their calendar. And when their calendar begins to be 80% full, now we're going to start delegating.
Right.
But let's not delegate until we look at what it is that we want to do, we love doing, and we're very good at.
Right.
And let's delegate all those other things to people who equally want to do it and are very good at it.
Right.
And once we do that, then we can expect them to be rowing in the same direction if everybody has shared in putting that vision together.
Right.
Now tell me about, I mean, you moved from that. How I want to say painful or joyous. What was the experience of moving from you being the strategic visionary to begin sharing that and letting other people begin to help formulate that vision for the company?
Well, I think, you know, one thing we didn't touch on, and I'll go back to your question, is that in terms of developing the operation and operating systems, getting back to the human capital side, you got to put the structures and processes in place so that you have enough people come through the ranks so that they can take over that job as that team leader, right,
mm-hmm.
that management. So that's one thing that I think, you know, entrepreneurs kind of don't think about, right? And one thing we did think about, we created the sales channel, right? We created the acquisition and sales channel, right? That was the first phase. Now we're working on the human capital side, and that's been kind of the last year, 2 years. And that's really critical. So, but going back to your question, for me, I was overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I was 2014, I believe, and I was overwhelmed. I was just doing everything, and I was just like, "Please God, I need I need some help."
Right, right.
And so for about a year to, you know, about a year and a half, I still ran it, and it nearly killed me. I mean, yeah. I literally did. And I got lucky enough that I was able to bring in a couple of guys. Raul Gandhi, who's our audit in charge, Gustavo Freeman, who's our tax in charge, Ray Zale, who's our consulting in charge, and then I brought in Robert Hahn, our CFO. So for me, it was kind of a sense of, oh, thank goodness, I now have a team of people that can kind of take over these roles and duties for me.
Right.
And then the guys up in Vancouver were instrumental in taking over our Canadian operations because, you know, you can't be good at everything.
Right, right.
You know, you just can't be good at everything. And so now we've kind of put people in roles, and we have monthly management meetings. We have uh-huh. weekly meetings, you know, in certain areas on, you know, cash collections and marketing and all that right. stuff. And we work as a team.
Uh-huh.
You know, and where there, I see issues and stuff, I go back in, I work with the department leads uh-huh. and on training, on, you know, various different things to get, you know, their business bigger and better. And so I think it's, you know, you have to take that team approach.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you got to be willing to kind of take a step back
yeah.
to go like 10 steps forward.
Yeah. Well, that's what I want to ask you. Can I ask you a tough question here?
Sure.
Now, at what point does the management team, these people that you're talking about here, at what point do they begin to help create the vision for what's going to happen? I mean, there's one kind of management which says this is what you're supposed to be doing. And that can be broken down into a number of different small steps, but that's what I expect you to do.
Mm.
Versus, tell me, here's our vision. Tell me if you want to help us get to that vision. I mean, that's the first question, right?
Right.
I mean, do you think we can get there, and do you want to be part of that? And if you want to be part of it, tell me what your process will be to get there, and then hold them accountable, not for what the CEO said they had to do, but for what they said they would do in order to accomplish the vision. At what point do you think companies make that kind of change?
Well, I think the big thing is, if you're going to put someone in charge, right, you got to give them, empower them to do that job,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to, you know, give them the guidelines and talk about what makes sense and whatnot, but you got to empower them to go and do that job, mm-hmm. which means that they could fail,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to be willing to let them, you know, fail and learn and keep developing. And so I think that's the one thing we've done. We've done is we've kind of looked at it and said, okay, this is where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
We all agree this is the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
These are the products we sell. These are the products you guys run. And we said, okay, this is what your cost structure is, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to meet these numbers every month, right, on average. And you got to put a plan together,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I come back in with questions and I say, I think we're over, for one thing, we're overstaffed.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I think we're overstaffed. Let's take a look at it. And in some cases we weren't, some cases we were. But they went back and did an analysis, not me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, when you're a leader, you got to be able to provide guidance,
mm-hmm.
right? Pick them up when they've made mistakes, and be a really good facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to, you know, it's not about really about you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting these guys and girls to run their separate divisions.
Mm-hmm. And do they hold each other accountable for what they each promise to do?
Yeah, I mean, because we all work together. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the great thing is with our organization, we're all working on common goals. So we all have mutual clients that we would do certain things for them. We go out in proposals together. You know, we all work together. I mean, mm-hmm. We have a great team of people.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to, you know, undermine each other and you know, deviate from that vision.
Right. Right.
You know, the one thing on compensation, you know, I think, you know, you can have we have different forms of compensation which reward people for having good years. But I think for the most part, we try and keep it kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
So no one person is bigger and greater than anyone else,
mm-hmm.
unless they go and do some stuff and you know, do a greater job than the other people. And
that's
understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, compensation is always the challenging piece, right, in terms of keeping harmony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you got to kind of think about it really through how do you motivate your leaders and what's going to motivate them.
Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds to me like you have put together a very good organization that's growing and has a clear vision and is tracking its progress.
Right.
What would you say about companies that you work with? How many of those companies have organizations that are equal to or better than this in terms of their productivity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's every organization is different, and every organization tracks things a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, a lot of the larger companies have more productive, you know, reporting systems, you know, management systems. And what I've noticed as they've grown, they've been smart enough to go in and add to the team. Mm-hmm. Go get independent, you know, board of directors, go get an audit committee, you know, do the right things. I think where you see lack of reporting from that standpoint and guidance, I think it's sometimes in the smaller firms.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying they don't have a vision or anything, but you know, they don't have the resources at that time. It's a tough time for them to, you know, to go hire the good accountants and whatnot. So it just varies. And you know, there's obviously the great thing with the job I had at KPMG was you flew around the world and you worked on all these large and small companies, and you saw, you know, good companies, you saw bad companies, and so you were able to kind of, you know, get that kind of gut check that not every company is going to have that perfect reporting system, but they have a strong leader and our management team that's going to, you know, carry them through. You know, we're CPAs, right? So we're a little more about reporting and numbers and metrics and everything. And I think, you know, there's a lot said that you can get out of numbers and metrics that actually parlay into that soft side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the soft side's huge, but there's a lot of stuff that you can read out of numbers that really parlay into that. And I think that's really important, is really seeing the linkage between the financial metrics and the qualitative factors, mm-hmm, within your organization.
Right. Well, I think the top three things that we look at are, number one is, what's the vision? You know, what is it that, what are we trying to do here?
Right.
And what do we want to be 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever our big, big hairy goal is? What do we want to be?
Right.
And how are we going to get there? Then it's, who's going to get there with us? And what is it that we need to have in terms of process to get there? And then who can we find that get what we want to do, want to do it, and are capable of doing it? And then thirdly, how are we getting the data back about our progress?
Right.
Those are top three things that I look for in a company. Now, tell me a little bit about what are your ideal clients? What do they look like?
You know, obviously, you know, being small middle market, we're not trying to be the big four firms, right?
Right.
You know, so we're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to go after Fortune 1000 companies. So that really kind of puts us down the small middle market.
And small middle market for you means?
We look at it, you know, from, you know, zero development stage technology company or idea company, all the way up to probably about 500 to, you know, $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the core products, I mean, we're very good with owner-managed type businesses where you've got a successful entrepreneur, they have a business, they got a family, they got the family trust, so we can do all the, you know, the compliance side and do the corporate tax returns for them. And personal tax returns. So those are really nice clients for us, kind of our bread and butter clients. And then on the public company side, I mean, it really varies,
mm-hmm,
from zero to, you know, $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Location-wise, we have clients all over the world. So we have people that speak multiple languages in the firm,
mm-hmm,
anywhere from Hebrew to Korean to Chinese and Spanish, of course. And so, you know, we champion that internally because, you know, we know if someone can speak a different language, that gives us an opportunity to potentially service that client somewhere else that we, you know, maybe couldn't have got that client before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we really want to be a boutique international firm where people come and will want to use us to help them with their inbound investment in the U.S. and Canada, or do, you know, outbound work into, you know, other markets as well.
So could this be a company, $5 million to $50 million, could they benefit from looking at their potential for international growth?
Oh, absolutely. Looking at their products and looking at, you know, what would make sense in different markets. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've done that in the past, and we bring other advisors in and on the consulting side in our consulting group. And, I mean, it's like, you know, there's so many things out there that I think some of these companies don't realize. They may be too busy running their business that, hey, their products would do very, very well in Asia or even Canada or Europe.
And that's part of that creativity we were talking about earlier is,
right.
is once you've decided you're going to be in California, then you can begin to get in touch with people who are creative and who are not only focused on making your business work right now, but to take a look at the possibilities, the potentials, to see where the slippages are.
Right.
And is that something that you guys help with?
Absolutely. Our consulting advisory group, which I'm involved with Rich Raymond Zale, who's based out of our Dallas office, I mean, that's the reason why we put that group in there,
mm-hmm.
is because we see so much opportunity in the small middle market in helping to advise companies. And it's just, like you said, a lot of times they're so busy running the business, right? And they just kind of don't step back and say, okay, where else can I be?
Yeah.
Right?
And things move so quickly today, right?
Right.
I mean, just dramatic changes very, very quickly. And it seems to me that that's part of what we might want to think about in California is that we are California. And helping each other thrive here is part of our good stewardship. Would
Absolutely.
That make sense?
Well, I agree with that. I think in California, I mean, you know, the positioning-wise, it's a great place to be. And, you know, going back to the stewardship side, like you mentioned, I mean, I don't think people, like, a lot of times realize what they have,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, let's say you're at $50 million, right? And someone else can come and look at your organization. I'm sure you've done it, too. You know, you look at the companies, well, these guys could be $200 million.
Right.
And if they went and did this, this, and this.
Right.
You know, so it's just kind of, you know, getting your head out of the sand and kind of taking a look around and realizing that, you know, you're in a great market here in California.
Right. Well, those are the kind of things that I'm excited about, and that's what we're going to be talking about on this radio show for the next year is how do we, who want to stay in California, how do we thrive here, and who are the what are the resources that we can bring to bear on our own companies to help us thrive? So I'm very glad and appreciate you being with us today, Greg. Tell us a little bit how somebody can get in touch with you.
Well, I'm going to plug our event.
Absolutely.
July 20th, we're having a networking event at our offices in Newport Beach. And it's 3501 Jamboree Road. It's on our website, Suite 540. And we'll have some special guests attend. There's open bar, food, and it starts about 5 o'clock, goes to 8 o'clock. Always have a DJ. I think we have already 250 people RSVP'd.
Oh, good.
So it's going to be a nice event. So if you want to come meet me in person, I'll be there. And we can have a drink together and, you know, spend a few minutes together. Alternatively, our main line is 949-335-8169.
Any hockey stars going to be there?
Actually, yeah, the Ducks and Angels might be there.
All right.
Some of the management personnel and the sales personnel. But
good.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to doing that, and we'll certainly put that in our calendar and be there with you. Well, this has been a wonderful experience with Greg Wall from Anton and Chia, kicking off our second volume of The Pilgrim on the 405, adding to those 150 people that we interviewed before. So thanks a lot, Greg, for being with us on this premier show on volume number 2.
Thank you, Will. It's been great.
And we look forward to talking with you again. Next week we have another CPA who is going to be with us talking more about how to help businesses thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Christ. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willchrist.com.